Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're exploring the culinary wonders of urban New Jersey with a tour through Newark. We speak to Frank Mentisana at Phillips Academy Public Charter School.
This idea of family style and made from scratch lunches continues to be a bit of an anomaly in the city.
We also hear from Gil Speyer from All Points West Distillery.
Newark used to have an incredibly rich beverage alcohol history.
And we'll tour Aero Farms, the world's largest indoor vertical farm.
We're growing using 390 times more productivity than field farming and 95% less water.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network to be amazed at the wonders of Newark. That's Meat plus sign THREE. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from roughly 12. I don't really know. This time, Nastasia, we were waiting for the computer, not the other way around.
At like 12:10, yeah.
At like 12:08, you freak. From Roberto's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn, joined as usual with Nastasia DeHammer Lopez. How you doing?
Good.
Got Matt in the booth.
Hey.
And special guest today, Nick Morgenstern. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
So you are the founder, proprietor of Morgenstern's Ice Creams, and what else? Why don't you tell people about yourself here?
That's it. I got two stores in New York. I got rid of all my other ventures last year. So I got Morgenstern's Finest Ice Cream originally at 2 Rivington, and then I got the new store at 88 West Houston.
So what's the difference between the two crowds on those in those two areas? I mean, because they're somewhat close to each other, but really they're completely different neighborhoods.
I think they're definitely close and concerned about cannibalization on the old store with the new store, but we haven't seen any of that. So there's diehard fans of the old store, and they like it for different reasons. The new store is much larger and offers a lot of other things that the little one doesn't, but the little one is maybe easier to access, and it is a different neighborhood.
Yeah. So now, why don't you describe your, so we've talked about ice cream on air here a bunch. People always write in and we're like, the Italian stuff is like super heavy stabilized. Don't let them lie to you and say it's not, like a lot of the Italian stuff, not saying all the Italian stuff, a lot of this is super heavy, super heavy stabilized, super heavy saturated colors, like a lot of flavoring to overcome the maximum amount of stabilization. And by the way, I find that stuff to taste good.
Same.
I enjoy it.
Same.
Then you have other people on the other end of the spectrum. We've talked about, use of eggs and temperature of pasteurization and whether you cook it long enough to get the texturizing effect of cooked eggs or just do minimal pasteurization so you don't get that egg, blah, blah, blah. We've done all this stuff. So just to give you like that kind of background of stuff we've already discussed, where do you fit? And then if you want to talk about, for instance, like old school eggless, like Philly style, go ahead. If you want to talk about, we've talked about lack of stabilization and the way Breyers used to be and how it doesn't last in a freezer case, yada, yada. So just give us some philosophy of ice cream.
Some details. So for us, we don't use eggs in any of our ice cream unless it is an egg-flavored ice cream. So we have 88 flavors on our menu at our flagship location now. And of those 88, two of them have eggs. One is an American custard, which is custard-style ice cream. And then we have a French vanilla, which is a vanilla ice cream that's made in a creme anglaise style. So everything else is made no eggs. It's cream, milk, sugar, salt. Every recipe has salt, and then there's going to be a little bit of milk powder and a little bit of glucose, and that's it. And then whatever the flavoring is.
No stabilizers.
No stabilizers.
Okay. So but does this mean that do you wholesale at all to people or no?
Very little. Only to my friends.
Is that why? Because of the lack of stabilizing, you don't trust people to keep it properly?
Wholesale is not really a part of my model. Right. This is not like for what we do as a business and how we want to bring the product to the consumer. I sell to people who really get what we do, who really want to have it, and they handle it the same way that we do. But they also are an extension of our brand because of the way that they talk about our product in the store and the way that they get it to the customer the same way. So nothing against, like, there's certainly business in New York to be done with wholesale ice cream, but that's just not the direction that I'm going, and it's just not really, it's not what I want to do, so.
By the way, call in your ice cream-related questions to 718-497-2128, that's 718-497-2128, or shoot them over to the chat room, and Matt will read them out. Now, so would you consider then yourself, like where do you come to this style of ice cream? Do you come from a Philly style background, or is it just this is where you arrived? Like, describe how you got to this place.
Worked as a pastry chef for a long time, made a lot of ice cream, mostly crème anglaise style, like that would have been done in fine dining restaurants where you're making pretty small recipes, pretty small batches. So you have a lot of control over the process, and that's the way that I was trained to do it. Started to explore non-egg product in maybe like 2006, 2007, when we were getting unpasteurized raw milk by the gallon from Four Story Hill Farms. They were bringing it to us just on the side. I probably shouldn't blow them up, but it was a long time ago.
Right.
And so, you know,
you could theoretically buy it now if you went up to them and bought it.
Or Connecticut, you can go and get it up there. This stuff that they were bringing us was still warm, and so it was like very, very fresh. And they were producing, they weren't producing it, they were putting it into a jug just to bring to us. So we were just getting 1 gallon from one cow, and they would say, this is really delicious, and check it out. And so we started to try and figure out, can we just make an ice cream that just tastes like this milk? And so that was the beginning for me of going down the path of not doing any of the ice creams with egg. When I was working for other chefs, there would be recipes that maybe had a stabilizer or maybe didn't. I was, you know, following their recipes. As soon as I was making my own stuff, we weren't using stabilizers. I find that stabilizers just really inhibit the flavor release, bottom line.
Well, I mean, for those of you that don't do a lot of work with thickeners and stabilizers, it is just for sure a true fact that anything that thickens or stabilizes does inhibit flavor release.
Especially if it's cold.
Yeah. It's just a question of how much does it inhibit flavor release and what is the flavor release? That's why industrially, and I'm not saying that as a negative about that stuff because I use that stuff all the time for it, but it's just known that, in fact, they rate different thickeners on how much they release and or mask the flavors of the product.
So our challenge... Every single day, we make really small recipes. We make a lot of them every day, is to make sure that we're, you know, following the process, which isn't that complicated, but it does have steps that need to be followed in order for us to make sure that we get the consistency of the product that we want, that it's smooth and creamy without using stabilizers. And then we've sort of built systems and equipment around the desired result to get us there.
You have ice cream here. While you're opening it up, by the way, listeners detest mouth noises.
Yeah. Which listeners?
Like, I don't know. Some of them are like violent about it.
I hate it.
They threaten, you know, threatened us.
I've been on audio things before where they really want you to get mouth noises.
Yeah, our listeners.
We have a separate show for that. Okay. Just those freaks.
Can we do that? Mouth noise issues?
I pitched that.
Nastasia,
show.
What do they call that? The people that are into the weird, like putting your face in the bread or the weird, like repetitive.
There's that internet thing, right?
ASMR.
There we go. ASMR. Can we have noise ASMR?
I have actually pitched that show to Heritage already.
What's going on?
Did they say yes or no?
They said yes. And then I was like, I don't actually really want to do that.
Let's start it right now.
Yeah. Okay.
So
we'll take a whiff.
So what flavor is this
take
here?
Take a whiff.
So what do you think? It's like passion. What is this? Durian. It's got that funky sulfur smell.
That's durian with banana. Don't start with that, though. That's going to blow durian. You out.
All right. You know, durian, though, like, has such a high solids content that I'm sure that adds its own creaminess.
Kidding, of course, that we have to adjust for that all the time. That's a good segue. This product that I have here, Stone Beyond Belief, Action Bronson's second cookbook, we made an ice cream sandwich with him. This is the first time that we've done mass production of a sandwich, and we do it all by hand in the store. And the flavor that he wanted the ice cream to be was banana pudding. So we make banana pudding. So this has egg in it. It also has stabilizer cornstarch and all the things that would otherwise go into a banana pudding. And then tons of banana. Banana is a terrific stabilizer for ice cream naturally.
What's the banana pudding of record? Mighty Fine?
Well, I mean, it probably would be Jell-O.
Jell-O?
But we didn't even really go there. I have banana pudding recipes, but I actually went to the New York Times, Melissa Clark.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We tested a few recipes.
She's strong.
100%. Yeah. She's got a lot of... She's got more... more time in on testing that stuff than we do. She does it in her house, too.
Can I give you a secret of boxed pudding? Like, my mom's 1970s doctored cake. Did I talk about this in already?
No.
So, like, my mom has... We have one doctored cake recipe, like,
when
Sandra
you say
D.
doctored...
Well, it's like... So, a thing now, there's whole shows built around it, is taking boxed cake mixes and doing crap to them. And there we're like, look, I made it! I made this! So, like...
I mean, listen, the cake box mix is just a blend of things that you could put together yourself in theory.
Yeah, more or less. But, like, I mean, look, they're technological marvels. But anyway, so, like,
true.
In my family, to this day, reaching back to the 70s, I believe from Sunset Magazine, which was a powerhouse back in the
70s. Yeah.
We still in the family have a doctored box cake that we still make. I still make to this
that
day.
That she made back then?
She made back then.
Oh, wow.
It was my favorite cake growing up.
What is it?
I yeah, talk
taught,
about it. What
I
is
have
it?
Taught Dax how to make it.
Awesome.
Dax now makes it on his own.
How old is Dax?
He now is 14.
Oh, wow. When did you teach him how to do that?
Like when he was like 10 or 11.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And
so,
he picked it up back then?
What? I picked it up when
no,
I was
he
like...
he picked it up at 10.
Oh, yeah. My mom made it again because I was like, it was my birthday. And I was like, yo, mom, make that a sherry cake. Make a sherry cake. And so, like, my mom made
Mom's
it.
Sherry.
So it's like, first of all, how 70s is this? Harvey's Bristol Cream Sherry.
Love it.
Which is, P.S., delicious.
Delicious.
Like, Harvey's Bristol Cream, don't hate. Delicious.
Come on.
And especially in cooking and baking, it's, like, so good.
Industrial food is delicious.
Yeah.
There's
man.
People that are very skilled at making sure that it's delicious again and again.
So here's how this recipe works, right? I won't give you the full secrets because I told my mom I wouldn't give out the full recipe, but you get your standard yellow cake mix,
mm-hmm.
right? Then you put in a bag or a box, however you call it, of lemon pudding. Lemon pudding.
Lemon pudding mix.
Lemon pudding mix.
Okay.
Right? Put it directly into the boxing. Then you put the eggs and stuff, but then not milk, Harvey's Bristol Cream Sherry as the liquid.
Swap it out. Yeah.
As the liquid.
Yep.
Right? And then you make that.
It's going to make it soft, tender. Oh, come on, forget it.
It's freaking delicious, traditionally in 70s style, in a bundt form, but we do also flat cakes and what else.
I love a bundt.
Then it comes out, you do the forkity fork on the top, and then orange glaze over that sucker. Orange powdered sugar glaze.
With a little more Harvey's in there, or?
No, I mean, it would be good. It might be Gilding Lily. I've never tested. I've only followed the strictly the 1970s kind of a
program.
Thing.
I got it. I like it.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. First of all, me personally, not an icing guy. I'm a glaze guy, just so you know.
Okay, got it.
I'm a glaze guy, not an icing guy.
Yep.
And I love a glaze.
In all donuts, cakes, whatever it is.
Oh, yeah,
morning
yeah.
pastries, all of the above.
I mean, like, you know, in donuts, like glaze and icing kind of merge into that thick glaze. That,
I guess,
like,
I'm thinking fillings.
Yeah. I like fillings. So here's the thing. And if you had Gaia handed me a cake with icing or a pie, I would take pie. If you handed me a glazed cake or pie, I'd be like, whoa.
This is tough.
This is a hard problem.
Yes.
You've now made the problem difficult.
Understood. Okay, I got it. All right, I got you.
Also, I put whipped cream on absolutely everything. Including, and you might hate on this because my sister-in-law, Miley, who runs the Food Network magazine, Miley Carpenter, she's the founder of the Food Network magazine. Before that was founded Rachel Ray's magazine. Before that, blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
Credibility.
Has some creds. And whatever you think of Rachel Ray, by the way, that magazine launched huge.
Brilliant.
That was back in the day. Whatever. So she does not, first of all, I hate to blow her stuff up here, not a giant fan of whipped cream in general, which is bizarre to me because is there anything really like, whipped cream is like.
Second only to ice cream.
Well, that's the thing. So I put whipped cream on ice cream. Not just in sundae format, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, but I put whipped cream on ice cream just as a matter of course.
Listen, as a purveyor of ice cream in New York City, I can say you are not in the minority on that one.
There you go.
We sell a lot of ice cream with whipped cream on top.
She thinks it's Gilding the Lily. Here's how I feel. Ice cream is the denser format. Then it becomes more airy as you go into whipped cream, into air, up to God.
We got
to
talk about the different types of whipped cream and how close to God they are.
Well, okay. So are you Swedish and do your non-sweetened whipped cream? I'm an American, so I put sugar and vanilla in my whipped cream.
Oh, you think that's American?
Well, I think that's how because it's the most like Cool Whip. It's the most like Cool Whip.
Ah, okay. So we're going Cool Whip direction with it then.
Do you like Cool Whip? Cool Whip is delicious.
Listen, first of all, I feel we just stop and clear it for a second. You're tiptoeing around whether or not I might like or not like a lot of these industrialized things that you're dropping in the hat here. And I love it all. And I'll tell you just to clear it right now. Number one favorite ice cream experience in the world for me, Bertillon on the Île Saint-Louis in Paris. Number one. Number two, I really love going to Gelidi in Rome, which is like this massive ice cream shop, gelateria that's in downtown Rome. That's like a total Italian shit show. Product is delicious. Always get it con panna with whipped cream on top and a big cone. But it's a tourist disaster. And if you go there as an American, be prepared to be pushed out of the way by multiple Italians while you're in line. They will cut in front of you and order in Italian in front of you. That's the experience.
That's the experience.
Number three for me, Dairy Queen.
Oh.
In order.
Whoa, 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 what era of Dairy Queen?
It's tricky now because when I'm on a road trip, I'll go, and there's still a few franchises that are outside of the Berkshire Hathaway conglomerate they predated. So they're still allowed to operate on their own, and finding them, you can Google it. Dairy Queen doesn't really want you to know that those things are out there, but there's a few up in the Midwest that are still doing it the way that they were doing it. They don't have to necessarily use all the proprietary stuff from Dairy Queen, but I still love a peanut butter parfait. I really do. No, I really do think that combination of things, it's such a simple interpretation of a hot tin roof, which is just vanilla ice cream, peanuts, chocolate sauce. That's all you need. And if you can get those things in an unadulterated format and taste them all together, they truly are almost like the holy trinity of an ice cream sundae experience.
What are your thoughts on the Blizzard as a technological marvel?
I like the Blizzard as an idea, as a concept. I think in execution and what they're doing now, it's got so much other stuff in it that it can, the time frame between when you're eating, enjoying, and having the experience, and then when you're feeling really bad, has gotten shorter and shorter the more stuff they put in it.
Right. Blizzards and whatever you call them now have gone artisanal. Now, Kith at the new Hudson Yards has those Blizzard machines that look like a... Have you seen these machines that look like earth-digging augers?
I know exactly what it is, yeah. They're cool.
The machines are cool.
Those machines are dope.
I would love to feed myself. Yeah,
created in
one
Germany. Those were created for a very specific purpose, which is that they make these conical cups that you can put the little frozen packet into, and you just throw it in the canister, and that digger thing goes down in there and then pulls it back out, and you get something that's sort of like soft serve.
Yeah.
So they've really taken any variable out of it. And managing and running a soft serve machine has its own complexity and issues. So this is like pretty... I don't want to say dumbed down, but it is. They're smart. Those machines are smart.
They are smart. They have to self-wash because there's such a freaking crap show of mess with all those blade parts.
But they have like the sanitizing solution
in
a chamber. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's nuts. And the little evacuation valve at the bottom of them. Well, you know what texture they get? If they don't get soft serve to me, they get remember the Frosty? Like that kind of texture.
But those all are still sort of falling into that category between like liquid and frozen.
Right, right.
And
it's in
that's
the middle.
Very desirable. We're getting to liquid here with one of these.
All right, we're going to eat. Jeez,
no, that's
Louise.
Cool. Listen, take a little swipe.
What are we eating?
Okay, so we'll start off with a flavor that we created a long time ago when I was running a restaurant in Brooklyn and I had my first ice cream cart. This is salted chocolate ice cream. And so really simple. Give me what you just tasted it.
What is it? I mean... Is it just my mind is also going to like Heath and caramel, or is
it's
there
so crazy you said that? There's a lady who's a regular at my store, and on Saturday she grabs me and wants to talk to me all the time. She loves the product, and she was like, I've always been, you know, eating this other one, and then I eat this one, and she was kind of like really getting into it with some of my counter staff, and she was like, there's got to be caramel in there. And the staff was like, I got the recipe list right in front of me, like there's no caramel in this flavor. And then I came up there, she's like, I want to talk to him. And then she's like, and I said, no, there's no caramel in that. It's interesting that you say that, though, because there is some of that. I think it's almost more like a butterscotchy kind of flavor that's going on there. So that's a relatively high cocoa content milk chocolate. 38% single origin. We buy all of our chocolate from Felklin, which is a Swiss company that's been family owned for 120 some years. And I just think that what they do as far as how they process and stick with the script on what they want to do with their product is, this is so consistent. I've been eating this in pistole form as my midnight snack in the store when I'm there late for 20 years. I've been buying from these guys, and I know when it tastes different. They'll send me other stuff. They sent me a 36% last week.
Yeah, no.
It's not it. I've been eating the 36% for like a week, and I'm like, this is not going
to
work.
You're not getting addicted to it?
Not in this, but this has a specific flavor profile too.
You think it's the milk powder in the milk chocolate that's giving it the caramel note?
A combination of things. It's also that profile. So I'm not going to give you all of the details of our recipes, but very close ratio of cream to milk. So
Nastasia hates families, by the way. When you said family owned, she's like, you lost me.
What are you talking about?
Well, please explain, Nastasia. Why is he saying that? What anecdote?
There's an anecdote about this.
I don't even understand.
What, Matthew, back me up on this.
Dave, I hate families? What are you talking about?
Only families you know.
That's insane.
Anyway.
Could be.
Wait, so speaking of close milk to cream ratio, then, first of all, let's go back to what kind of machines you use and how do you... Because, like, everyone, when they go high on cream, by the way, I love high cream. Like,
high butterfat, yeah.
Yeah, like, recipes. Everyone's like, you're going to over-churn it. It's going to turn to butter.
So can do. Can do.
Because the texture on this is fantastic, by the way. And but what is the lifetime of something like this?
I get 90 days, but that's... our walk-in freezer functions like a blast freezer, which is pretty crazy.
So there's not a lot of movement up or down. If you had this in a normal freezer, what would you say the life was? A home jerk freezer. A Rite Aid freezer.
3 weeks, max.
What's this guy? What am I eating on here?
We call this Dusty Gianduja because it has a lot of cocoa powder in it. I find Gianduja hazelnut, chocolate made with hazelnut oil. I love Gianduja, but it's very sweet, typically very sweet. And we strive for as low sugar content in our product as we can have with still maintaining the texture and consistency. I find sugar, try to use sugar the way that a savory cook uses salt. So like it tends to add, it can add to the flavor profile of something. People want sugar when they're eating ice cream. Obviously, they want something to be sweet. So we add quite a bit of cocoa powder to this. I don't use cocoa powder very much. We use it to make fudge. We use it in our chocolate ice cream, which I didn't bring you. I should have. I was in a little bit of a hurry when I was packing the cooler for this. And so I think that the cocoa powder in this kind of balances. Texture-wise, this is not quite as warm as the salted chocolate. I brought this in a cooler, that big cooler behind you, with a little piece of dry ice in it. So I think the pints were kind of shuffling around in there. But I still think you're getting something here. Sorry for all those eating noises on
mouth noises.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kotbalk cave-aged cheeses, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Andrew Friedman, and I'm the host of Andrew Talks to Chefs here on HRN. Every week, I interview a diverse cross-section of the best and biggest names in professional cooking. Give a listen and get to know all about the inner lives of chefs. You can find Andrew Talks to Chefs wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
I was going to ask you about something off the subject real quick. An employee of mine has banana phobia.
Right. What do you mean, afraid of bananas?
Just like can't deal with it.
Right.
All aspects of the banana. Yeah. Like the way it looks, can't deal with the smell, but most importantly.
Nastasia asked the only question.
Man or woman?
I'm not going to say, actually, I'm not going to get into the gender. Cannot deal, absolute no fly, is the sound of someone eating a banana.
Really?
Can't handle it.
But does it matter? What is this person's, we don't know the gender, what is this person's feelings on plantains?
I didn't get that far.
So, like, first you have to, like, there's a lot of cultural things. There's, like, the sweetness. There's, like, the obvious sexual references.
None of that.
There's the maybe afraid of slipping on a banana peel.
None of that. No.
Like, then there's, like, how ripe is the banana? You know what I mean? Like,
the
whole
thing is a no-fly zone for this person.
Is this person, did they eat an underripe banana and that taste of cement? Do they not, like, nail polish?
I think that what I got out of it was there was an issue where they were forced to eat bananas for breakfast as a child.
So it's just a mental issue.
I mean, it's deep.
Yeah.
It's
I'm saying,
serious.
Like, you know, this is like a Clockwork Orange kind of a thing. This Speaking person can orange. No longer listen to Beethoven while eating.
Mm-hmm.
What's this guy?
That's a tricky one. That has olive oil and orange in it. Chocolate with olive oil and orange.
That's quite delicious.
But getting that texture, speaking of overrunning, the olive oil really does not want to cooperate when it gets cold.
It's so weird. The well, you know, that was famous. The olive oil gelato at Babbo was like the most, like everyone was like, how you do it? And they're like, why don't you crap off? You know what I mean? That was always the answer. But like, you know what's interesting is that the mixture with the oil, the orange almost takes on green notes.
I agree. Well, I will tell you the olive oil is very young and it's from Chile. It's very spicy. It's from Grove and Vine. Nick Coleman, who was formerly oleologist for the B&B group.
That's a gross word, right?
Oleologist?
Yeah.
I kind of like it now, but because I know him and I really like him. If you haven't talked to him, you should get him on here.
He's a weirdo.
No, he's not. I don't think he's a weirdo at all.
He likes family, so he's really down for this.
He's a brilliant guy, super kind, and really knows his stuff, and he loves it. I mean, he loves his olive oil game is heavy.
So back to cocoa for 1 second.
Sure.
What's your theory on cookout on stuff? Do you cook that? Do you like do a cook on the milk with the cocoa powder to get it in? Or do you just soak it forever and then blend it? Like, what's your theory on this stuff?
So for the chocolate ice creams, everything gets tempered in, milk powder, sugar, cocoa powder in this case, and salt. And then it goes back in pasteurized to 180, and then it's pulled off and it's done. That's it.
Full batch. So you're heating the cream too?
Oh, yeah.
Now, are you...
We don't heat the milk.
Don't you heat the cream, not the milk?
Yep.
So, because you want the flavor of that. Of
yeah, exactly.
Got it.
You got it. Now, and it does change it.
I have heard many things, including from, was it a Stolting rep or was it one of the Italian people? But for those of you that don't care, I apologize. But
then why are they listening if they don't care?
Right. Well, there are various theories about how long you have to, if you are going to pasteurize and or heat something, then how long you should wait before you spin the product after you chill it back down, because the theory goes that the fat crystals will agglomerate in different ways and you will get a different final texture.
I find so little evidence to support this, dude.
Right, but
I've
this
done
is
a
the,
lot
this,
of this. I know.
A
this
lot
is
of talk.
Prevailing theory is that you should let it mature for 24 hours and all that stuff. And we've done it so much and we're like, it's not, we can't find enough evidence to suggest. I'm just telling you, our experience.
There's an Italian guy who I met at a trade show whose name I forget. And I can't remember whether he was working for a German, but he was Italian. And what he said was that if you spin it, if you basically, he was pushing a machine. He was one of these machines where it went direct from pasteurized to chill.
Yep.
And he was like, if you chill it right away, right the hell away after you do your pasteurization, then it's just as good as aging it. He was against any sort of in-between stuff. But that's probably just because he was selling a machine that did it right away. You're saying that it doesn't matter one way or the other.
Well, I think that for us, but part of the challenge for us in running a business is, you know, is the juice worth the squeeze? In general, so like the steps that we take, are they going to yield a result for our consumer that they're going to want it, like that they get it and they understand it? And there's times where we pull things because we're like, we're doing all this work for this thing. I'll give you an example. We have a peanut praline ice cream that we use these crazy peanuts from San Antonio, Texas. They're called Picosos. And
what are they like compared to like a Virginia peanut? Are they big like a Virginia peanut? Or are they tiny like
Spanish red skin,
so
salted, hand roasted.
Okay.
It's my favorite, and I do think for me, it's
we're going
like,
to get in a peanut fight now. But go ahead.
That's all right. I mean, you can have your opinion over there, and I can have mine, and we can live in the same space. It's going to work out.
Not true.
And if you want to bring your own peanuts to the store, I'll put them on the sundae for you. I'm not mad at that, especially if it's like that's your peanut. For me, the Picoso is the ideal peanut for a hot tin roof sundae.
You like a small peanut.
I do. I do like a small peanut. I'm not afraid to say that. So we were making a praline with that and then grinding it and doing all this crazy work to make the ice cream. And at the end of the day, number one, the ice cream wasn't selling very well. And number two, you know, you taste it and eat it and you say, is this translating? And it wasn't really translating. So we're doing all this work downstairs to do this thing and it's not really getting delivered to the consumer. And I think you got to have experience with that, with what you do behind the bar.
Oh, I hate it so much. I hate it so much. There's whole categories of things I won't do.
Such as?
High proof, super chill, carbonated work, or like, there's just like, you work real hard on flavors and people don't get it. And it's, for me, it's not even just that it's not worth it. It hurts me that people don't appreciate something that I think is good and that takes a lot of work. And so it's less heartache just to not do it.
Agreed.
Or especially if something's a lot of work and you're worried that it can slip because you're not on top of it all the time. It's going to slip. It's a complete heartache. What is this?
Whoa, clean off the spit.
You're saying clean it off with my spit? Lick the.
Goddamn. We got more spoons. We'll go to the banana flavor. So that one is banana that has just a little bit of calamansi in it. Which
is a fun word.
Calamansi?
Yeah.
People have a hard time with that word, actually, on our menu. What is that? Calamansi?
So this is a much different texture.
Yeah, totally.
This has got like a...
It's all that banana. Banana ripeness.
So she won't make it if you're making
You're pushing it. This into a gender thing again.
That was a mistake.
It was not a mistake. You don't make mistakes.
Well, I don't even remember that.
Okay, try the durian banana now right off the back of
that. I should say, you don't make that kind of mistake.
You assume it's a woman.
Yeah. No, I just picked one to see if you responded.
Why would you assume that?
She's just trying to rally you. Don't let her rally you.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I saw Matt moving back there. Do we have a question or something?
Yeah, Matt, what were you trying to tell us?
He's trying to tell me not to do something.
I was trying to tell him not to get so handsy with the mic.
Oh.
Yeah. It was around the small peanut comment.
Peanuts make you handsy with the mic.
You do have a question that might be a little adjacent to the topic, but we could go for it. Tyler tweeted this in a while back. He was wondering, do you know anywhere to buy less than 1 pound of Ticaloid 210?
Ticaloid 210. That is adjacent. We were talking about stabilizers. No.
Okay. Dave, do you have any Ticaloid on hand?
In my pocket? No, actually, this is a mixture of gum arabic and xanthan mm-hmm. that I use because when you're making syrups, like specifically oil-based syrups or butter syrups that need to withstand immediate
agitation.
Agitation, dilution, mm-hmm. and simultaneous like chilling with the fats. It's a huge pain in the butt, and Ticaloid can do almost everything except coconut fat. Nothing that I have. This is why you just buy Coco Lopez.
Yep.
Which Nastasia is kind of like, you're the Coco Lopez of people. So like it won't break no matter how hard you push Coco Lopez, but Ticaloid is like a good second best. I don't know of a place you can buy small amounts of it, but I have published somewhere. Someone remind me before the show. I'll look up of the a good starting ratio of gum arabic to xanthan to use to make your own thing. I will say that.
So you're making your own, in other words.
Yeah, nowadays I don't remember what the ratio is because it's been a long time. We don't have any butter syrup on the menu right now.
Okay.
I had a bartender who was afraid of butter syrup back at Booker and Dax days. Afraid of it.
Why?
Wait, tell the story.
I'm not going to tell the story. He's actually over at my house on Sunday.
If you don't say his name, it doesn't matter.
I'm not going to tell the story because it's a family show and it's not a family story.
Guys, we're running out of time, and the amount of time you spend arguing about whether to tell the story or not is the amount of time it would tell.
That's like 30% of any given episode.
Yeah.
Also,
speaking of stories, we're not going to have time because we have a lot to talk about this week. But
can I just make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Can't you just break off like 4 ounces of Ticaloid for this guy and send it to him?
No, we don't now make our own.
So make some for him and send it to him.
I'll find out the ratio. I got to remember the ratio. But
his secondary question was, are there other good uses for large quantities of the stuff?
I mean...
He's just going to come up with
stuff. I mean, any sort of syrup with oil in it, though, like if that comes up for you a lot, I mean, we ran through all of ours and then we had to, you know, make more after, you know, because you can buy it from TIC. But the point is, I now even forget what I was going to say. I was going to give a suggestion. Story. Have I ever told the puke punch story on the air? It's not really my story to tell.
No.
All right. Next time. We don't have a lot of time. Because we're talking about other stuff. What do I have in my spoon right now? My fresh spoon.
Nut strawberry with pistachio pesto added into it.
It's good.
Nice.
I like that combo. That's very popular. People really like that flavor.
Now, on durian. Two things. On durian, I've noticed that most of the durian you get in the U.S. of A. has been, even if it's still a whole durian, has been pre-frozen.
It's all frozen. Everything that comes in is flash frozen.
Or it's not as stinky after you freeze it.
It's like 50%.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And therefore...
Not as stinky.
Therefore, for us Western folk, more...
Palatable. It's a diluted version of something that's extreme. I agree.
Did you say diluted or diluted? Or both?
I had ice cream in my mouth.
Yeah.
Diluted.
The... I tell you, I've told people on this on air a million times. I once made a durian caramel by accident. I was never able to recreate it. It was a mistake in a pressure cooker. I was pressure cooking to try to see whether I could dull durian even more by pressure cooking.
Wow.
And I hadn't controlled, because I was using at the time a non venting pressure cooker, so it was shooting off moisture and the temperature was going up. And I stopped it at just this perfect point where it came out like a caramel, and it was rich and durian but not stinky. Then I tried for the next like 2-3 weeks to try to do it again. I could never
Did you get close?
Again. No.
Not even close.
Never even got close.
Oh, it was just one of those flukes.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like, that's why I tell people, you know, you could do the best thing of your life, and if you didn't write down everything you did.
Yep. We deal with this all the time, man. Take a keeping the notes. Our binders are crazy in the store. And then we update on the minute. I'm like, put it in, the computer's in the kitchen, and put it in print and shred the old one and put it back in, because you can't. It's like things get too all over the place all the time. It's really difficult. It's really challenging. And we're adjusting all the time. Things change, and we don't have those same. If we're not using any stabilizers, then just dealing with the equipment. The store is brand new, and we're just like learning how to make sure that everything's coming out consistently. So there are changes that need to be made on the fly, and then the cook does it, and then we're like, "Did you write it?" And they're like, "I wrote it in my book, and my book's in my car." You know, this kind of thing. So we try to keep that stuff recorded. It's really important.
Oh yeah, if you didn't record it, then it didn't happen. You should get punched.
Yeah, and the value of the time that you spend the first time and then the second time trying to remember and trying to like recreate it and all that stuff, it's like evaporated. It's gone.
Yeah, and Nastasya and I are actually terrible at it. That's the one thing we tell other people to do, and we're terrible at it. The other one we say is if you have time to lean, you're gonna die.
You should be writing the notes on what we've been doing this whole time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You guys have a strong human resources department.
Before I forget, you said beforehand that you're involved in a charity thing you want to talk about. Talk about it now.
I purchased from my store two articles of clothing for you guys, which is a t-shirt that created this year. With St. John's Bread and Life. That's your shirt right there, Dave. I got you a large. I think that's the right size for you. So I was explaining to Nastasya that we get approached by a lot of different...
I like those guys, by the way.
Who, St. John's?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I know they're architects.
Oh, really?
My wife used to work with what used to be Rogers Marvel Architects now. Okay. Yeah, and so like they did a bunch of architecture work for them. Yep. And yeah, I like them. They're good people.
So the woman who's running their culinary program over there, Millicent Soros, she spent a long time in the diner organization and has done a lot of different things in food, in the same industry that you and I find ourselves in, and now has dedicated her time to helping the soup kitchen at St. John's Bread and Life get more organized. And, you know, if you go into a soup kitchen that's producing tons and tons of food, more than most restaurants are producing, and they don't have the same experience or skill set that someone like you and I do, to understand how to do it better and understand how to be more efficient, more effective with it, and use the same ingredients that they get donated to them to make the food tastier, make the food healthier. So she's really doing something that's it's extraordinary. And what they do every day, provide 3,000 hot meals in Brooklyn, is a crazy feat, if you can imagine. And they serve them out of their soup kitchen. They serve them out of trucks, and they do all kinds of things. So for us this year, our entire initiative for any dollar that we're going to raise goes to them. And so we made a shirt to help celebrate that, which is something that we've learned over time. Our in-house illustrator, Jessica Che, who does a lot of different stuff for us, incredibly talented, did a brilliant illustration of a bird eating a piece of pie. Millicent is a very famous baker, wrote a book, How to Bake a Better Pie. Incredible baker, incredible chef, but really incredible baker. She's got the hands. She just knows how to make it grandma style. And so,
this is a pie a la mode being eaten by a pigeon.
It's not a pigeon. It's a raven.
Raven. Oh, it is? I love corvids.
She's from Baltimore.
Corvids, smartest of all birds, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like any of the corvids are the smartest bird. The thing is like it's got a look in its eye. Like it's got that pigeon look in its eye, which is why I thought it was a pigeon. But sure. I like it better now. It's a raven because now I'm like, oh, it's smart. It's not. Pigeons are dumb.
Millicent's no dummy.
Yeah. So believe me. Here's the thing. If a bird consumes caffeine, will that mess it up? Because it's got a piping hot thing of coffee here.
As long as it's smoking a cigarette at the same time, it's doing great.
Well, it crushed the cigarette out. It was like it tried it. It's like, I don't like this.
It's finished.
I'm going to eat the pie.
Yep.
Cigarette and pies don't go.
It depends on where you're from. If you're in Baltimore, it might be something that's happening down there.
Have you ever like tried like how do cigarettes and ice cream work? Doesn't seem like to me that would work either. Although smoky ice cream works. I've had good smoky.
Yeah,
ice
we've
cream.
Done some smoky ice cream. I'm not a smoker, so that activity is not something that I would be able to speak to. Smoking a cigarette and eating ice cream. But we do see customers at the new store. We have a big patio. They'll go out there and have that ritual of having their cigarette and having some ice cream outside. It's an indulgence.
I was never a smoker, but my grandparents and, you know, my aunt always were. So for me, the smell isn't the smell of the cigarette itself. It's the smell of old cigarettes.
Sure. Yes. And that's the space like, and the being in the house like and all that stuff. Did they smoke in the house?
Oh, yeah, in the car.
Yeah, all that.
Yeah.
Serious.
Yeah,
that was
so,
serious.
So, like, to me, that's, like, the childhood memory mm-hmm. of what smoke is.
I got one more thing for you.
Let's do it.
Ice cream sandwich.
While you're opening this ice cream sandwich, let me ask you this. So how do you avoid over-churning on high butterfat recipes, or do you just, like, do you have to alter your machines, for instance?
They're not high butterfat.
I thought you said you used, a large ratio of lighter cream.
Yeah, we use low butterfat cream, and we also keep our ratio adjusted based on sugar content. So very rarely do we have an overrun issue. Very rarely does that happen, where we're overturning.
Yeah.
Only on something like that olive oil chocolate, where we've added that other fat to it, and we're still kind of like playing with making sure. I feel like this one, we tasted it, and you're getting that flavor of the olive oil, but it's not... it's not predominant, and we couldn't really back down the olive oil any further than that, than where it is right there.
Wouldn't the olive oil, I don't know, I've never done it, but wouldn't the olive oil actually kind of protect against overchurning because it would stop the butter from...
Olive oil will break out of it. Yeah, it'll break out of it. You can't, I mean, you could, you know, take it apart with a microscope and be like, what broke? But it's broken. The olive oil is separating out. So I broke this in half for you guys. It's soft enough. But just get a little bite. So this is the Action Bronson ice cream sandwich. This has been very popular. It's inspired by my favorite ice cream sandwich of all time, the It's It from San Francisco, where I'm from. And so you have a little Nilla wafer there that we made in-house. You have some banana caramel in there, the banana pudding ice cream, and then there's a chocolate shell on the outside of that thing. And that's been pretty popular, this thing.
It's really good.
This has been a hit. It's serious. That's a 5-ounce ice cream sandwich.
It's a nightmare for your worker because... The banana is very present, and it creates noises when you eat it. So
I know, it's
like,
not a good.
Your worker's like, ah!
Nowhere near it. Nowhere near it.
Does he have to make them?
Now it's a disease.
Now it's a he. No, they do not have to make them. I'm getting better at that.
So, you know what? I think it's always better to use the ungendered third person anyway.
It's very complicated, though. It's tricky to do. We're trying to remember that. It's hard. It's not easy to do nowadays. So we should talk a little bit about something that I think you can speak to, which is menu matrix, which is something that I spend a lot of time thinking about, which is the combination of all the things that we put on the menu that ultimately make the experience for however many people come through your doors. Morgan Stern's transacts so many people.
Family show. Very good.
Really?
Yeah.
I needed the expletive right there. Over the weekend, we probably transacted, I don't know, it's not even warm out yet, but it was over 1,000 people. So there's 1,000 experiences happening that have to happen really fast, and that the way that they interact with the menu is ultimately what defines whether they're going to come back again or not. I mean, the product has to be good and all those other things, but with 88 flavors on the menu, hopefully you have like enough choices that someone sees something that they have to have and something else that maybe they want to have the next time they come. That's a big part of how we, you know, get people hooked in and they want to keep coming back and try what we do. So when I went to the bar, I went to Existing Conditions 2 weeks ago and I saw that, like, you have a pretty substantial selection going on there.
It's no Death and Co., but yeah, we have a good...
Whether it's relative or not, just like objectively coming in and looking at it, there was... I think it was the right amount. It wasn't overwhelming for me. Sometimes I go to places and I'm like, there's too much information. I can't make a choice, which is what people say about Morgan Stern's quite a bit, but they do keep coming back.
Well, do you bullet it out? I mean, I think bulleting out is the main thing. If people can hone in on a chunk, like this is like the problem.
So when you say bullet, we categorize.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think overwhelm, like if you look at a Greek diner menu,
yes.
You know what I mean? You're like, even, and those are
bulleted
out.
Well, if you look at the Shopson's menu.
I've never been.
You should go. That's an important experience to have as a New Yorker, man. Really, I'm serious.
I mean, I live right there.
You've been to Katz's.
Oh yeah.
And like Katz's can have like you can be up or down or whatever it is, but I still love going to Second Avenue Deli myself. I'm not from here, but those experiences, even when they're not good, they're great. Because yeah. they are so true to what they are and where they are. And so Shopsins is something
I
also.
Literally live two blocks from the Essex Street Market.
Got it.
So it's like...
You're in my hood. I'm right down there, too. I live in the same neighborhood. Yeah. I'm on Elizabeth Street now in Chinatown, but close.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know New York, it's a very we're talking about a very small radius.
We're neighbors. We should be throwing rocks at each other.
Well, there's not that many rocks around. You have to break apart the sidewalk. I mean, you know.
Construction site.
Yeah, we could throw pigeons.
There you go.
Construction site. Wait, so to me, I think... if you just list everything, then you're ruined. You know what I mean? But if you bullet stuff out and people could be like, okay, like at our menu, it's, you know, it's fundamentally like, is it served on up on a rock?
Yep,
is it shaken? Is it carbonated?
Yep.
Is it non-alcoholic? And each one of those is only like somewhere between 4 and 8 drinks. And so it's easy to kind of consume sections.
But you find that the consumer would rather... search by category on that style versus the spirit?
I mean, for us, well, I would say for us because we're, you know, a group of people, so I won't speak for them. For me, I start more from what style of drink am I going to have. I very rarely start with spirit.
Okay.
Me personally, which is weird.
As a consumer.
Yeah, because when I'm talking to a guest... Like, well, you kind of have to because it's been beaten into you. You ask them about spirit first. Whereas for me, I'm always like, well, what are you looking for? Are you looking for something more refreshing? Are you looking for something more spirit forward? Because then I can say, well, am I gonna push you to carbonated and stirred drinks? Am I gonna push carbonated and shaken drinks, or am I gonna push you into stirred and built drinks? So I like that's where I and then I'm like, okay, are you looking for bitter? And then if they are not interested in having that kind of conversation, if I'm getting that vibe off them, that I'm not interested, they're not interested in having that conversation with me, then I'm like, okay, what spirits do you normally drink? Because like I clearly
that's where I start. Also, yeah. What ice cream do you usually like?
Right.
80 flavors we can't really point, but I do think I'd be really curious to see how it was for you guys there. You have a large menu and you have a big enough space where there's like enough volume running through there to say, what if you were categorizing by flavor profile? Not by spirit, but like you have a lot of fruit representation on your menu, which is really cool for someone like me.
I'm a fruity guy.
Great. And it's like it makes the experience more, it's kind of more fun to see that those flavors are coming through. And because of your knowledge and what you do and how exacting you are for like pulling that stuff out, literally pulling out those flavors, then you know when you go there, when you drink that drink, it's really going to taste like that thing. And I wonder if your consumer would respond to that if you were putting it out there in the category as far as the flavor profile.
I don't know. It's interesting.
If you put a banana category, if you put a citrus category and so on, would that, and then the spirit comes next and the style is listed that way. There's any number of ways, obviously, to like organize the information.
I remember we had the fight when we were starting. But again, there's just so many stakeholders.
Why has it got to be a fight, Dave?
It's always a fight.
Arguing.
Tell them about what happened last week when you walked into the...
Oh, Jesus.
I'm solo, by the way.
Really? So it's like... I have to say that I think collaboration makes me better, personally.
It's challenging, yes.
Yeah, I don't think that's true for everyone, but it is true for me.
It is true for everyone.
Yeah, I mean...
Some resistance is going to get you... You're going to do things that you wouldn't otherwise do, yeah.
People that you know... everyone, listeners here, too. I'm not talking about just us, right? Look at the people you know... that don't have checks on them. They are small children. They have become small children.
Totally.
You know what I mean? And
but the checks can come in different way, like different forms as far as like how you're buffered. I'm buffered by the fact that we have to balance our budget and we don't have endless amounts of money behind us and we have to be able to operate something that's operating. So then we have to operate
and
it.
And consumers are a big check.
Is the budget is the consumer.
You know, but like, yeah, it's like, oh, I was wrong. People don't like this.
Right.
Oh, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's
that experience all the time.
Yeah.
I think something's going to work. It's going to be amazing. A flavor that we thought was going to be great and it doesn't move and we move it off the menu.
So the most depressing thing that's happened to me with menu. Don Lee, my partner one of my partners at the bar, he is like, look, just name this thing. We have this drink that's got this super salty water that we get from Saratoga. It's called the Saratoga Paloma, right? Cool. I didn't want it to be called a Paloma because it didn't. It has some of the same. Paloma's got freaking squirt in it, right? It's got grapefruit soda. We don't use grapefruit soda.
Does a Paloma have to have squirt in it?
That's what it is. You know what I mean? And then like, so it's got this kind of thing. So like, this is like this crazy water from Saratoga that nobody else has that's not in any Paloma. We're using clarified grapefruit, right? We're re-adding everything and carbonating it like together, right? Mm-hmm. And it didn't come from the idea of a Paloma. It came more from, frankly, from just wanting to use this water and like pushing it in the direction of grapefruit because salt and grapefruit. And, you know, tequila.
You could do salt with a lot of things, though.
Right, no, but I use a lot of grapefruit juice anyway. One of my big drinks at Booker & Dax was gin and juice. Like, I have, like, a long personal history with clarified grapefruit juice. Like, I love it. So, like, it's one of my kind of go-to things.
That still doesn't mean that you had to use it for that drink.
No, but I created the drink because that's the drink I wanted to make.
Okay.
And then it was post-labeled as a Paloma, right? Even though, like, you can count on zero hands the number of Palomas that have been made with super salty water.
Okay.
Or with clarified grapefruit juice, for that matter. You know what I mean? So, because, grapefruit soda, I like it, by the way. Fresca, delicious, does not taste like grapefruits.
True. Yeah. Yes.
In a way that Apple Jacks does not taste like apples.
True.
Yeah.
I agree.
An old school fake banana doesn't taste like banana. But
You cannot divorce those two things. Like that whole process that you're saying that you're struggling with, and someone else was saying you should think about calling it a Paloma because that's going to be the way that people are going to look at it.
Right. And so he won that battle. We called it the Saratoga Paloma.
You lost.
And we are still selling a boat ton of them, a crap ton of them. And he's like, it's because it's called Paloma. And I was like, Don, there's no AB. There's no freaking AB. We don't. And what I wanted to do, and I don't think we're going to do this. I want to have.
You want to change the name?
No. I want to have the exact same drink on the menu in two places with two different names. The exact same drink, and then see which one's. Because we have another one. Garrett, what?
What would you call it?
Don't tell anyone now.
Garrett has this drink on the menu. Garrett, our tiki fiend, he had a drink that is called Don. It's called Beachcomber Negroni.
I saw it.
Yeah. So, and we sell a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Don's like, it's because it's got the word Negroni in it. And then, we took off one of our Justinos off the menu. We took off Professor Plum, which was a prune Justino, into Elijah Craig Bourbon.
Delicious.
And we swapped it out for a Compass Box and Date Justino, which is good. Date or Fig? I can't remember which one we put on, because I like both. He put that on, and we appended the word old-fashioned. It's Fig. Fig old-fashioned. And we sell a lot of it, and Don's like, it's because it's got the word old-fashioned in it.
Don sounds like a marketing genius, as far as I can tell. I've never met the guy.
Yeah, but like, I just hate it so much.
Why?
Because I just hate that it's that easy to push people around. You know what I mean? It's like that they're not like that.
We are all part of the herd, Dave. Even you.
Yeah, I know. That's what I say, but it's like,
you are at times being herded.
In spite of my rage.
And you need the hurting.
I am still just a rat in a cage.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. We all need to be herded sometimes, though. We do. Yeah. Have you not ever sat down and looked at the menu and just been like, ugh, yeah, I just need to get that. I don't know. What am I doing? I can't think about this. Most people don't think about this as much as you are thinking about it.
So, like, I am perfectly fine with this because this is the way I am. I hate choice. First of all, I hate choice. And as Nastasia knows, if you go out to eat with me, I insist on ordering last.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Because you want to see what everyone else is doing.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Anyway, so like the thing is, it's not that it changes, but like I'm kind of always on the fence in my mind between a couple of things anyway. So it has to go around. I don't know. I've got problems. Listen. So like, but my favorite thing to do, and I hate it when people can't handle it because a lot of servers can't handle it. I'm like, listen, I haven't been here before. I might never come in here again. I like almost everything. Just bring me something that's representative of what you do. You know what I mean? And like,
you do that?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm like,
how often does that wind up well?
Sometimes it ends up really well if they take it right. You know what I mean? If they don't take it right.
But are you making the estimation that you're going to do that once you have gauged your server's ability to understand your particular psychosis?
Yeah, well, it's like you try to get a read off someone. Like, you could tell if you ask them questions and they're clearly pointing you towards just what's easy for them to sell
or
high
ticket
item, whatever it is. But it's, you know, especially like I'll go to a town and I don't know anything about the town or like what they do there. And then I'm looking at this menu and I'm like, I'm told I should go here. Like I go to a, let's say I go to a barbecue joint. The first time I was in Kansas City, I went to like, you know, that barbecue joint at the gas station. And I'm like, listen, I know a lot about North Carolina barbecue. I know something about Texas barbecue. I've never been to Kansas City before. What is it I need to have here? You know what I mean?
But you're describing a scenario that's not the one that I'm describing, which is when you're just like, you're going somewhere very specific. You know that you're going to have an experience and you need them to guide you because that you need to be guided. I subscribe to the same philosophy. If I go someplace and I'm just like, tell me what it is that you guys do here and let me experience what it is. And if I want to add on to it and augment it based on my own taste, then I'll do that. But there's certainly times in my life where I'm just like exhausted or can't be bothered and I need to eat and I'm like at a place and I'm like, all right, I don't, you know, I understand that sometimes people don't really want to have to choose. Choosing is work. So it is.
I hate choice.
Okay, so it's energy. You have to like deal with it. And so, but you're writing menus and you're fighting against the fact that putting on the tag name Negroni or Old Fashioned or whatever else is actually making it easier for people to make the selection.
Yeah, well, Don is often right.
Marketing genius.
Don Lee, he's not listening, thank God, so I can say on air that he is often right. but it doesn't mean...
Someone's going to point him to this.
It doesn't mean that it has to make me happy.
Okay, so you are disturbed by the fact that he's right, or you're disturbed by the fact that he otherwise is just winning this fight?
The whole thing disturbs me.
The
whole thing disturbs me.
Okay, not to get off the subject.
So
I want to hear more. We'll check back in September on what happened with your two cocktails. Same cocktail, different names. I want to know what happened.
If we ever did. So Nastassi wanted me to say this quickly. We were at the bar. So Nastassi and I, the way this works is that Booker and Dax... And by the way, we talk, like right before the rip us off, we'll talk about spins all updates because we got the new spins all in.
Like 2 minutes.
Oh, jeez.
Can you give me one of those to borrow and use for a week and I'll bring it back?
So Nastassi and I don't have an office anymore. It's just the two of us plus Matthew and Hong Kong Chris. That's the whole company. And the way we operate is we get on the phone and yell at each other constantly.
Understood.
So like we're meeting at the bar because we're going to go do this French fry shoot with Harold McGee that we did last week for 0.0 that Nastassia posted our tests for, and apparently it's the greatest video that Nastassia and I have ever done. Like people were like, you know, talk about see how the sausage is made. It's just us yelling at each other the whole time. So we show up at the bar and we say they're having a photo shoot, a huge photo shoot at the bar. The whole bar is filled
with
people.
It's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Who's having a huge photo shoot?
The bar. They were shooting a bunch of drinks for something that I didn't have to work.
You're talking about your bar.
My bar.
So you say we were having a big photo shoot.
Yeah. Existing
Got
conditions.
It. Okay, because I just want to
understand. So Nastassi and I show up, and we show up separately, and then within two sentences of talking to each other, we were full out screaming at each other. And everyone was just like, what the hell? You know what I mean?
I don't know how that happened.
Oh, it was nasty. But Nastassia, like, gets mad at me, and then she knows how to... She's like, I am mad. I want Dave to be mad. But the problem with me is that I go from being totally fine to not fine.
Quickly.
With Nastassia especially, because it's the same button. It's like if someone new comes up and starts punching me in the shoulder, it'll take me like 3 months before I get really agitated. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
But after 10 years, she knows she's punching the exact same place on my shoulder.
Yes.
I'm like, I told you about the shoulder, damn it! You know what I mean? It's like, and so she knows how to...
And you're the same. And
yes.
You're the same.
You know what I mean?
You know, this comes through on the show. I don't know.
All right, we gotta go, Dave.
Well, hold up. So I didn't get to any of the questions except for I will say this. Matt Hall called in with a Liquid Intelligence life hack. Liquid Intelligence is my book. And as you know, Nastassia uses it For instance, if she was taking a pint of your ice cream out of your establishment.
But they also made me make lasagna, and I'm taking both to a potluck.
Right. So then she would use my book as the thing that separates the ice cream from the lasagna, and it's the right size to stop the heat transfer during the transfer in the bag, but it's not too heavy. So right. She uses it as an insulator. Yeah, I could make her a styrofoam insulator, which would be a lot lighter, but she likes to use my book.
Yep.
So here's another liquid intelligence life hack from Matt Hall. I'm new to Instagram and may have screwed things up, but I tried to send Dave a picture of my wife using liquid intelligence as a mouse pad. She does this basically every night. I thought you might like to know that the book can be used for more than separating hot and cold foods.
Dave, can I have a copy of your book?
Brilliant.
Yeah, sure. Then, we had an update, which we're not going to have time apparently to get to, from Alex on he cooked his Canadian geese that were shot out of the sky in Toronto. So next week we'll read about that. We have some soda problems we have to deal with for Daniel next week in Cleveland. We have someone, I'll just do this real quick. Paris wrote in and is trying to make pretzels, but trying to deep fry the pretzels, and is doing the lye dip. Here's the thing. You need to do the lye dip. Paris is par baking this before frying it, but doing the lye dip after the par bake. You do the lye dip before the par bake because you're starting the Maillard and stuff. And I think if you do the, let it sit for a while. So if you do your dip in the hot lye, it should be hot lye or hot, you know, sodium carbonate, pull it out, then do your par bake, let it sit for a while. Yes. Basic things ruin oil. They saponify the oil. Whether it's a huge factor, I don't know if it's going to be a huge factor, but I know that if you go hot out of the oven into the lye, wet into the oil, going to be problems. So do
that's
that.
That's a hazard.
Yeah. Remy is doing a fundraising dinner with liquid nitrogen. I have tips, but I'll have to get to them next week because that's too much to say. And we, Mr. Morgenstern, did not get to talk about the history of the sundae, which Nastasia made me research.
No, Rebecca did.
Rebecca, our Rebecca? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
I'm happy to come back.
All right, we'll talk about the
summer with new flavors.
What do you think about the banana split?
What do you mean?
What do you like? Do you like it?
Yeah. It's like the second most
Does
important
that girl
sundae.
That works with you. Like
second,
it?
What's the first? Regular one? Regular
hot
like
tin, hot tin roof.
Hot tin. Listen, the banana split, I went on the Wikipedia and these garbage faces had a banana split. Because Wikimedia comments, some idiot put a banana split on a plate. It wasn't in any form of boat.
Dude, I was going to bring the banana boat over here. We have 8 of the vintage, like they're from the 40s and they're shaped like a banana and they're big. They look like a banana. They're yellow. They're beautiful and they fit a banana. It's got to be in a boat.
Yeah, it's got to be in a boat.
Banana split eating experience is really critical.
I don't like a lot of the things that are like I don't really like some of the stuff that's in it, but a banana split's great.
Let's talk about what's in a banana split real quick.
Okay, so that was going to ask you, how hyper-traditional, as a Dairy Queen man? Oh.
So hyper-traditional.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.